Rick Carlisle out as Dallas Mavericks head coach. 13 years gone.
Bucks even up the series with the Nets' huge win by Milwaukee at home, extending this 1-7.
And we power rank the best coaching availabilities in the game right now here on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We're going to Game 7, baby. Game 7! Game 7!
Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And welcome. You are locked on to the NBA. My name is Nick Engstead, host of the Locked On Mavericks podcast. And joining me for the first time on Locked On NBA, I believe, the designated alternate, the always filling the substitute extraordinaire. What you got for me, Tony East?
Sixth man of the year. Jordan Clarkson thrown is taken by me as I check in for another Locked On NBA. Fun night of basketball and this crazy week of NBA news. Doesn't stop. I mean, it's never stopping. So lots to talk about, as usual, this week in the NBA.
Yeah, I don't know what... were you on with Jackson the other day when it was just like all the news at once?
Yeah, that was shows. Matt and Jax. I was thinking about that as a podcaster before their show started. I was like, how do they even structure a show when there's like 10 teams in the news in one day? It's been a crazy week.
Today we got it pretty easy. We're going to go over the Brooklyn Nets and Milwaukee Bucks game. The Bucks hold on and force a Game 7, baby, as Zaza Pachulia said in the open on the podcast. And we'll get into that. We'll break it all down. Then we'll talk about Rick Carlisle and the Dallas Mavericks. Rick Carlisle leaves the Dallas Mavericks after 13 years. It's a little bit of a shock to some people, but we'll talk about why maybe that wasn't necessarily a shock. As the host of Locked On Mavs, followed that story for a long time. And then, of course, power rankings. We got a power rank. The coaching availabilities there is 6.5. Seven and a half. Right now. So we'll power rank those and get into those in the third segment. All right. The Milwaukee Bucks hang on 104-89 to beat the Brooklyn Nets. It's hard for me to... I'm gonna start here. It's hard for me to watch this series and just not think if the Nets had a healthy James Harden and or a healthy Kyrie Irving, that they would just be blowing out this Bucks team right now, right? Like, it's just sometimes it does come down to luck and injury luck for some of these teams that get a run to the Eastern Conference Finals or even the Finals, but it's just so hard for me to not just watch this with the idea that, man, if Kyrie Irving was out there, if Harden could actually like drive to the rim, this would just be such a different series.
I think fully healthy Harden, KD, it'd be onions right now for sure. But I mean, Kyrie was healthy for Game 3, and the Bucks won that one. That was the ugliest game in NBA playoff history. That's not true, but in this NBA playoff.
But Game 1 and 2, though.
Yeah, Game 1 was competitive for a lot of the game, but Game 2 is awful. Yeah. So I agree with you that it would be over by now, I think, at this point. And it's certainly disheartening, especially with Harden. Like, every three he takes is short, right? And he's not taking these catch-and-shoot three. He hit half his threes this game, but, like, all his shots are short. He isn't driving as much. He's just not a force at all. Like, 16-7 is like, looks like a good stat line, but in 40 minutes from James Harden, he's just bogging down so much. Man. So it's, I agree with you that I think it'd be over if they were both healthy at this point, but it's so weird seeing Harden struggle like this. And without Kyrie, the Nets are just not the same team at all, obviously. So that's why we have a Game 7, but credit the Bucks. I mean, they took full advantage, and they're a Kevin Durant all-time performance away from winning the series in six games. That's what I kept thinking about in the second half of this game, was like,
interesting,
man, KD just saved this Nets team because the Bucks looked way better than them for most of this game.
Yeah, very true, very true. And it does come down to injuries, and you got to play the team in front of you. So that's what the Bucks are doing. They finally were able to figure out their crunch time offense, their clutch offense. Don't let it get within 5 points, right? Like, that's what they decided to do.
Well, it got to five. That's in my notes. Joe Harris hit a three and it got to five, and I thought, oh boy, here we go. This is going to get, I think it was 82-77. And then Middleton got fouled on that three, and Harden was freaking out even though Harden didn't foul him. And they challenged it. They lost. Middleton hit all three, and they never looked back. I mean, it was a five-point game with like 7 minutes to go, and they ended up losing by 15. The Bucks just smoked them from that point on. So, it was definitely not as close as that five-point game would suggest, but it was also not as lopsided as the final score would suggest either. Weird fourth quarter, weird game, but the Bucks really looked good the whole time.
Yeah, well, and also we have like the Reggie Perry, Elise Johnson, like Mike James minutes, and like Nick Claxton. Nick Claxton only played 3 minutes in garbage time there, but Chris Chioza like getting thrown out there in garbage time. But What do we think about this James Harden thing? Because he's out there playing and he's doing some stuff. He's just trying his best just not to get injured anymore. But what is he going to bring for a game seven? I mean, it doesn't seem like Kyrie Irving's going to come back. Maybe he will, but can Kevin Durant carry this team? And can the Bucks get out of their own way enough to actually win this game seven?
I think Kevin Durant can. We saw game five, right, that he has the ability to carry this team to this level. But with Harden, this sounds kind of dumb because it's James Harden and he's amazing. But I almost think that the solution to make him a little more impactful is just play him like 23 minutes instead of 40, because he clearly can't run like at all, right? On defense, he can barely move. He's not driving as much. He's settling for so many threes, and yet he's still playing 40 minutes. It's like, if he can't move this much, why do you have this guy who's barely a positive player playing so many minutes? He's not even willing to take a lot of his spot up shots. So I think he'll definitely keep playing. You know, he wasn't even listed on the injury report for this game, but even as I get that his field goal percentage says he was a lot better this game than game five, but like, he's not offering a ton when he's out there, especially defensively. So I think lowering his minutes might help with the impact, but if not, they're going to need another Kevin Durant. Oh my God, how is he doing that game to win game seven?
It almost seems to me like Harden is out there just because we need another guy that can make smart decisions with the basketball. We don't need another Bruce Brown taking clutch shots off the roll at the end of games, right? We need some other guy to make some decisions, to take some of the just playmaking role off of Kevin Durant, because he can't do everything all the time, even though we desperately want him to. Because if he doesn't do that, then your other options are Joe Harris, Blake Griffin's okay, Jeff Green, I guess Bruce Brown. The rotation outside of the garbage time minutes was really, really short for Steve Nash. Landry Shamet played a little bit. Like, that's kind of your options right there. They don't have a ton of other options for playmakers. So it seems like Durant is there just Harden is there just to make plays. But let's focus on Milwaukee now.
Yeah. They deserve the attention today.
Milwaukee gets the win, and Giannis, 30 points, 17 boards, 3 assists. He finishes plus 22 in the game, a wild stat line for Giannis in 41 minutes. And he was helping on defense, playing the 5. That was kind of a big turning point that they really they switched him over to the 5 late in the game, and then it ended up being how they made the run and how they got to win this game.
That's in my notes as one of my things with an exclamation point. I was telling Nick before this game was not close enough for me to have so many exclamation point items in my notes. But Giannis hit the 5. Finally, Bud goes to it. Everybody on the internet and writing about the series has been clamoring for it. And lo and behold, they go on this huge run to end the game. It was totally dominant. The Nets had no answers. And they've been playing kind of small, like you said, with a shortened rotation for a lot of this game. Blake Griffin can't contain Giannis, like, possession to possession. He's done a good job on Giannis a lot of the series. But, you know, in this fourth quarter, they're finally small and spread out. They just had no answers for him. He looked phenomenal at the end of this game, and it lets him play make a little more, right? Chris Middleton was able to get some open threes as a result of it. Guys were playing off of him really well. So finally they go Giannis at the 5. It helps him on defense. It helps the whole team on offense. Put the game away. Huge, a rare and huge in-game adjustment for Mike Budenholzer to get this win for the Bucks.
It's almost as if Rick Carlisle leaves the Mavericks and Bud is like, hey, maybe I should start coaching my ass off. Like, maybe I should start doing something now because this guy's coming for my job. But we got to talk about Chris Middleton, because at times during this game, he was their only viable option on offense. Drew Holiday had a rough game, 8 of 21 from the field, 1 of 10 for 3 for Drew Holiday. And Chris Middleton at times was like the only guy that has to, they could hit buckets for him. I saw Ben Thompson, who's a huge Bucks fan on Twitter, say, Middleton has to touch the ball every single possession. And it was true that he had to be the one to get the ball, especially in half-court sets, because they couldn't just run Giannis into a wall every single time. They had to get somebody else that could make a shot and could hit a jumper. And Middleton was that guy, 38 points for him.
I hate to keep coming back to when the game was close in the fourth, but I mean, that's when a lot of my super hyper-focused paying attention was. When the Bucks cut it to when the Nets cut it to 5, they get Middleton the ball on the next possession to try to hit a 3 to give the Bucks the lead, and he drew a foul. He hit all 3 free throws. He got 12 free throws up in this game. That was huge for him. That was more than Giannis, right? He did a good job attacking and getting fouled. And then when it was still, I think, within 10, maybe it was a 12-point lead or something, he got fouled and made the 3 at a 4-point play in the fourth quarter as well, right? That's 7 points on 2 possessions right there. Like, he was electric in the fourth quarter. He was picking his spots, driving well, drawing those fouls. Right? Again, 10, 12 free throws is ridiculous. And just objectively, like, 38 points on 16 shots is an absurd stat. Like, he had a ridiculously good offensive game. And this is the kind of game they need from their stars to win. We saw it in game 4 as well, when Giannis and Middleton had all the Bucks points in the first quarter. And they didn't even play that well the rest of the game. But that was that was game 3. But that was enough for them to win, right? Those two guys just started off so well that it was enough for them to win. So this time, They both closed really well, and it was enough for the Bucks to win. So huge game for Middleton. Love seeing him play well. He's been one of my favorite guys in the league, who's been underrated for a while. And seeing him and Giannis step up for the Bucks is huge for them. They've had a rough series, and they just responded to a huge gut punch with this huge performance.
I kind of want to make the parallels, and I see a lot of people try to make this parallel on Twitter between the Bucks and the Sixers. And if it's Sixers Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, it'll just be the Bucks fouling Ben Simmons late, and then the Sixers fouling Giannis late. But like, if you try to compare these teams, Giannis is more like the Embiid character on the team, but Middleton is like the Tobias Harris. They have to have that guy, you know, create offense and be the shooter and hit shots. And Tobias Harris couldn't do it the other day, and that's why the Sixers lost. And Chris Middleton came up big today, and it's sort of just like, he just comes down to your second best player sometimes. If that guy can show up, if that guy can give you buckets, if he can be 100% player, then all of a sudden you can win a game like this. So yeah, Bucks, great work on their part. Get to force a game seven. I'm so excited. I love game sevens. Hopefully tomorrow or today on Friday, if you're listening and watching this, we'll get two extra game sevens too. Three game sevens over the weekend.
Do you think the Nets have any cards left? I mean, they shortened the rotation so much today. I don't know what else they can do besides just pray Kevin Durant's amazing again.
Cards are like German injections, right? Like they need something. They need something else. Like send them, fly them over to Germany to get some one of those like platelet injections, like whatever it is. I mean, they need something. Super soldier serum, anything.
Yeah. I think they got to get Joe Harris going. Like all series, he's been really rough, and he's been a big talking point for the Nets all season. Like, this is their fourth guy. You know, like I know that LaMarcus Aldridge, and he was on the team, and Blake Griffin now were the names that they've both been good and helped, but they not enough. And Joe Harris has been their fourth best guy because he's been a really good shooter. And the Bucks have just taken him completely out of the series. So if they could get him going or get another good Jeff Green game, that'd be huge. But without those two guys giving them anything, I don't know what other options they have. They're so limited against this Bucks defense when it's really clicking. And PJ Tucker was a plus 30 this game. His defense was ridiculous. So I don't know what other options the Nets have in game seven, unless one of those role guys gets going. I'm really interested to see how that goes.
Yeah. It's tough for your team when you need a God tier level Jeff Green game, for you to win a game. Like, it's just come down to that with Harden and Kyrie Irving out or hobbled. So coming up, let's get into the Rick Carlisle situation. Let's talk about the Mavericks situation as a whole. We've been talking about it all week on Locked On Mavs. Let's get into it on Locked On NBA.
Yeah, but first, you know, Nick, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's impossible to get all the parts you need for your car, truck, and a chain storefront. So why endure the stupid, intimidating questioning? Is your Odyssey an LX, an EX, a DX, an SX? And wait while the counter guy just orders those parts in front of you. And you can just order them yourself at home at rockauto.com. They're a family business. They've been serving auto parts customers online for over two decades. They'll have everything you'll need for your car on their website, whether it's for your classic or your daily driver. You can get everything you need in just a few easy clicks and delivered right to your door. Their catalog is super unique, easy to navigate. You can see whatever you need for your car and the specifications that you need. And their prices, of course, always reliably low. So go check them out right now, rockauto.com. Check them out. Right, Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that we sent you from the Locked On Podcast Network. They have amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com.
All right, Tony, let's talk about Rick Carlisle. He leaves the Dallas Mavericks on his terms, apparently. That's what's being reported. That's what's being PR'd out there into the universe. He is leaving the Dallas Mavericks, parting ways. So now the Mavericks are without a head coach and a president of basketball operations / GM since Donnie Nelson left. It's been emergency pod after emergency pod on Locked On Mavs. And I just want to kind of an outsider's perspective. What do you think about the Mavs situation right now? What do you think about Rick Carlisle leaving?
Sure. I mean, I thought at the end of the season that there was a chance they changed coaches, because when you lose in the first round as many times as the Mavs have, basically since their title, have they won a series since their title?
Nope. They have not been out of the first round since 2011.
That's what I thought. So yeah, I totally get why you reflect on that level of success and go, maybe this guy isn't the right coach for us. He had the success in the past. So I thought maybe they would move on, but you know, I cover the Pacers for those who don't know. I know a little bit about Rick. Like, he's a really good basketball coach. But he's not as good as at the interpersonal stuff. So I thought he would probably stay. And then there was the statements from Cuban, I believe, suggesting that he's probably going to be back, or Cuban wanted him to be back. I forget exactly what the wording there was. So just because I think he's a smart X's and O's guy, and the Mavs are just like a piece away from, you know, being good at, like, the Clippers might make the conference finals and the Mavs push them to seven games. Like, they're a piece away from being right there with the best teams in the West. I thought he'd be back, but I get why he might not want to be there. Seems like there's some, I don't know what the perfect word is, turmoil.
Drama.
Yeah. Within the Mavs organization. And he's not having it. Maybe they're not having him. Maybe he's a part of it. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much. And again, you're more plugged in on this stuff than I am. But I think given all the information we've gotten over the last week from athletic reporting, from everyone's reporting, plus the way that the Mavs have, you know, basically gone since their title, I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense that it happened.
Unlike you, I will speculate wildly. I think there's a couple of different reasons why Rick Carlisle would have left this job and did leave this job now. Is because the story came out the other day on the Athletic that Haralabal Valgaris has been, you know, he's a analytics guy, he's a sports gambler, better, and Mark Cuban brought him in to be like another voice in the front office, which, you know, fine, whatever you want to think about it, but rubbed everybody the wrong way. Seemed like he was dictating, according to the story, he was dictating lineup changes, rotations, all that kind of stuff, starting lineups, like draft picks, everything. It seemed like he was dictating, and it was coming straight from him. He would maybe tell it to the coach, maybe tell it to Donnie Nelson, and then when they said no, he would go to Mark Cuban, and then Mark Cuban would be like, hey, we should do this. And then coming from the owner, you kind of have to. So it seems like those type of things were happening. And so then Rick Carlisle was like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Plus, Donnie Nelson is gone. That's my backup. That's the guy who will vouch for me. And then I'll be on the hot seat next year because we haven't been out of the first round since 2011. All that combined, Rick Carlisle, I don't have time for that, right? He's like, I don't want to deal with that. I don't have time for it. I'm going to be out. I'm going to go coach for the Bucks or the Celtics, you know, who he has a lot of connections with, obviously. And so it's really interesting. So now the Mavs are left with, okay, it's a new era now, basically. You start over with a GM and with a coach, whoever that is. It sounds like Mark Stein's reporting says that they're going to get the president of basketball operations, GM person first before they get a coach, which I think makes a lot of sense. But it seems like the next coach is Jamal Mosley. He's been on the bench for a while with Rick Carlisle. The players really like him. And the most important part of all of this that everyone in Mavs land and all the MFFLs are dealing with is that Luka loves Jamal Mosley. And it seems like what Luka likes, people think Luka is going to get. But that's where it is right now. It's really interesting to see where the Mavericks are going to go. This is a pivotal offseason already for the Mavericks because they have max cap space. They have Luka. They have this Porzingis contract player situation. Now, he's healthy, which is great. Like, there's one plus in that whole situation. But they have this. And then they have a roster of role players that are basically, you know, like 4 through 12 men in a rotation. Like, like a lot of them are solid and you'd be great, but you still need those guys in that 2 and 3 spot. Can Kristaps Porzingis be one of those guys? It's still yet to be seen, depending on which playoff series he can be, cannot be. It just depends. But this is a pivotal point in the Mavericks as a franchise for Luka Doncic. It seems still, by all the reporting out there, he's going to accept the extension. $201 million is kind of hard to turn down, but I don't think he's going to be the first one to do it after his rookie year. So all the turmoil, all that matters is Luka coming back and then what the Mavericks do now as far as a coach and then president of basketball operations first.
I'm kind of torn on how I feel about what they're going to do going forward because I like a clean slate. Like if it's going to happen this way where there's kind of some turmoil, just having everybody kind of out at the same time isn't the worst thing ever. Like if your front office is dysfunctional, now you can reset everything, get everybody on the same page, lock it up, get it going. I like that. At the same time, it's not really a clean slate if you hire internally for your coach, but you got to keep Luka happy. That's priority number one with every move you make, right? So I think Mosley should be the coach under that lens. So it's not like a full reset or clean slate, but it still is a clean slate. So maybe they keep Finley too. That was some reporting from Mark Stein as well. I think he was an assistant GM. I don't remember his official title, but you know,
vice president of basketball operations. Like the same thing.
Right? Yeah. So maybe they just like promote guys from within who weren't as much a part of the drama or whatever you know, the perfect word is there. And it all turns out better. And these are guys that Luka likes more. Cause that's, you know, my opinions on what I like more about clean slate or not. Doesn't matter. The Mavs goals this summer are simple. If Luka wants to hire this guy, that's who you hire, right? You're going to give him $200 million. You got to kind of kiss his butt a little bit on the way when you do that. So it's an interesting situation for them. And I get the pros of hiring, you know, from the outside and getting fresh perspectives from both the coach and the president. But it's basically what does Luka want to me? And if it's Mosley, then Mosley should be their coach. And I don't think a player would really care who the president is a great deal. But if he wants a guy there, you hire the guy there too. So who knows? I was surprised that no one in the Mavs land has brought up Kokoskov yet. His national team coach.
Igor, we've been talking about Igor a little bit.
Yeah, coached for the Suns for a year, and then everybody thought he was going to get drafted to the Suns because of that. So I feel like he could be in play for the Mavs. That's just totally speculation. But, you know, if he's not, he's not. It is what it is. I'm just spitballing on their future now.
You have to kiss Luka's butt, I guess. But this clip of Luka on the Slovenian national team, he's playing there. He's there right now playing. This coach just freaking yelling at him and screaming at him. If you're watching on Locked On NBA on YouTube, he's just straight up just screaming in Luka's face, pointing at him.
Wow.
Just over and over again. So he can take a little bit of coaching there. You don't have to be just a butt kiss.
No shadow DMs on the Slovenia team.
Yeah, so. I guess not. I just thought it was so funny in all this talk this week of like, we got to make sure Luka's happy, make sure he's okay. And his Slovenian national team just screaming like profanity at him. Like in an exhibition game.
So what do you think about the clean slate? Like, I'm sure given the Mavs not winning anything for 10 years, like you're all about a reset, right?
Yeah, I knew one of these was going to be gone. Like one of the four entities was going to be gone. Haralaba, who we're not sure if he's still on or still off. We haven't really confirmed that with the Mavericks yet. Either him, Donnie Nelson, Rick Carlisle, Kristaps Porzingis. Basically, the three main players there. One of those three was going to be gone. Now, it seems like two of them, possibly three with Porzingis still, you know, on the team, but could be traded. It depends on what the next president of basketball operations says. But it didn't seem like they were going to go into next season with all of those players still in play.
That makes sense.
So, yeah, it makes sense for one of them to go, but now Rick Carlisle makes it two. So we'll see what happens. And it's just a pivotal moment, man. Like, I just keep going back to that because Rick Carlisle or Mark Cuban was right when he said that the grass is not always greener when you try to make a coaching change, and now they have to make one. So
I think one of the most overstated tropes in sports is this is the biggest offseason in the history of whatever team. Like, I think that some team says that every summer, and it's almost never true. But for the Mavs,
I think it might actually be true this summer.
I don't know.
In the past, the biggest offseason has been we're chasing Darren Williams and Dwight Howard, right? Like those.
Didn't they trade Steve Nash? Like, that's got to be it.
No, I know, but
biggest offseason ever.
You go into the offseason, you're like, this is the biggest one because we're going to try to go get this. Right. We're going to try to go get Mike Conley and Hassan Whiteside together, right? Like, that's what they were trying to do.
This actually could be the biggest offseason in Mavs history. Sans, maybe some star trades in the past. They won a title. Like, obviously, there were some big moves they made in the past. But, yeah, this actually could be the biggest offseason in Mavs history. So, big firing.
You know what's going to be necessary during the biggest Mavs offseason ever is a daily Dallas Mavericks podcast, which I host over at Locked On Mavs. So coming up, we're going to talk about another big offseason for a team and a coaching vacancy for the Indiana Pacers, which you are the host of the Locked On Pacers show. So let's get into that. We'll rank the coaching vacancies. We'll talk about that coming up. But before we do, let's get into Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Tony, what's your favorite flavor?
Peanut butter brownie, definitely. It's Adam's favorite flavor, my co-host as well. So Locked On Pacers, big peanut butter brownie fans.
Interesting. I'm mint brownie all the way. Like, give me a mint brownie. I also love the fruit ones, the cherry barcia and the raspberry. I love those as well. The coconut brownie chunk, though, is the best.
It is. I wish that's that. I can't that's wait for the best back. Bar. Yeah.
You have to keep checking. Go back to builtbar.com. Always keep checking it back. They add new flavors. I really love the puff bars, like the churro puff one. I like that one too when they sent that to us. So keep checking back to see if those are going to come back. Builtbar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15. You get 15% off your first order. Again, LOCKED15 for 15% off your first order and your next order. It can be used more than once. Builtbar.com. All right, Adam, let's get into our power rankings. Coaching vacancies right now. We've talked about the Mavericks. That's one. Celtics. That's another one. Wizards, Pacers, Blazers, Magic, Pelicans. That's seven coaching vacancies. And then we're going to do the half. We're going to put the Bucks in parentheses because if they don't win this game seven, it seems like Bud is on his way out. But we'll just do the seven for now. Let's start with what's the worst one? Let's go backwards. What's the worst coaching vacancy right now?
You just called me Adam coming out of the break. So I got to recalibrate who I am. My worst job, I was torn between two, but I ultimately settled on the Washington Wizards job, as being the worst available head coaching opening. I think it could be a cool one. DC's cool. It's living. They have some nice young stuff. Denny Avdia, Rui Hachimura, Thomas Bryant's kind of young too. And then of course they have Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. Like, that's really awesome. There's also a chance that Russ isn't awesome ever again. I mean, he really came on at the end of the year and saved their season, but he started poorly two seasons in a row now and has really struggled for half the seasons. And Beal could demand a trade any second. I know that's been speculative for forever. He could also extend any second, and then this job looks a lot better. But that there's just so much unknown about how this job could go. And our pals Hollinger and Duncan have called it a Silas. You know, he got hired in Houston, and then immediately they just traded every vet they have, right? So now they're coaching an awful team. Like, they called this job and my second worst job that I'll talk about in a second a high Silas potential job. So I agree with that, and I have the Wizards last.
Yeah, that one's really interesting, the Wizards job, because you do have the stars, but it's like, it just seems like they're faking you out.
Well,
right? Like we have stars, and yet we're this team that, you know, I'm not sure if you have the ceiling or the potential to be anything, really.
They had the stars last year, and they had to go on this crazy April-May run to get into the play-in tournament just to get the 8 seed. Like, is it really that awesome of a roster? And I get that that's not on the coach, but, you know, it feels kind of lame duck. Like, you're going to have pretty high expectations also. Yeah. And
you get to coach Russell Westbrook.
You do. Yeah, you do get to coach two stars, which is really cool. But, yeah, Russ is.
No, is that cool? Is coaching Russell Westbrook, is that cool? Is that a positive Scott Brooks or a negative?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Who's your last one?
Man, this might be a hot take. I'm going to go Blazers.
Okay, they're my second worst.
I think Blazers is the worst job because the pieces – are they going to change that much? Are they going to really go out there and make a whole bunch of moves? Because I think we've seen the ceiling for this team. They made that Western Conference Finals once because the road was mapped out for them. But I think this Blazers team is kind of capped out, but they have expectations for going higher than what they actually can do. And so that just makes it an impossible job. Veteran players already there. You have to come in and win right away. Like, the Magic would probably be pretty high for me because you go in, there's no expectations. You have these young guys and you're like, you know, one of these young coaches that just gets to go in, James Borrego or whoever, just gets to go in with no expectations. But with Blazers, you have expectations, and I don't know if you have the talent or the roster to pull it off.
Yeah, they're my second lowest for similar reasons, right? The guy who comes in, they're going to expect him to do better than Terry Stotts just did. And look, like, the Blazers should have done better against the Nuggets. That's pretty well documented, but they don't have a ton of stuff they can do better. The roster is just not like, Dame is amazing, and then CJ doesn't fit that well with him, and the rest of their stuff is just like a bunch of awful defensive players, right? So they're really stuck in what they can do. I don't know how a coach can come in and make Carmelo Anthony and Enes Kanter like good defenders all of a sudden. So, yeah, it's a tough job. And to quote Hollinger and Duggan again, huge Silas potential. Like, you could come into this Blazers team, and if you lose in the first round, Dame demands a trade, and then you're coaching a terrible team in 1 year. So, yeah, I similarly have them low, the high implode potential team. You know, it could be awesome. Like, you could click with Dame and things could go great. But I have them pretty low as well.
Yeah, are you going to be a Rick Carlisle or an Avery Johnson,
right? Yeah.
For the Mavericks? Yeah. Like, Rick Carlisle comes in and takes him to the title. Avery Johnson comes in, and I guess he did some good things there and should have won a title. Should we go back to that? I don't know if we need to do a revisionist history on that. So Blazers and Wizards seem to be our bottom right there. I think I'm going to put Pelicans for similar reasons. You do get Zion Williamson. You have these young players, but it seems like they already have these expectations to make the playoffs. And it's like in a similar vein as the Blazers. You have these expectations to make the playoffs. I'm not sure you have the roster and the talent to get there. And then you also have to deal with this Zion family stuff where it's like Zion should leave. They don't have the right, you know, pieces around him and all this kind of stuff. That just seems like a headache you don't want to have to deal with. And there's a lurking giant there. There's just this lurking presence of LeVar Ball. When is he going to come back? Because he's been dormant for far too long, and I'm ready for a LeVar Ball resurgence of just something if they re-sign him and they just keep him for a long time, because then he's going to feel established and all that. But yeah, that's a minor thing. But
I have a Pelicans job fourth. I don't know if I should have said that. I think we're just going bottom to top, and I just ruined the way we're ordering this. But
that's fine.
I think coaching Zion has a ton of allure. And Ingram was an all-star last year under Gentry. Clearly, I don't think Stan was right hire for them in the first place. So that was kind of strange to me, but that doesn't matter at this point. They have got young, cool stuff. They've got some good players under contract for a while.
Cool stuff.
And I don't think the expectations will be that high. Like, they haven't made the playoffs since AD left. Like, obviously, I think they want to, or they wouldn't have fired Stan Van Gundy. For other reasons, he got let go as well. But
you don't think if they don't make the playoffs next year that coach is going to be gone too?
No way. I don't think they should be. That's
what expectations are about, right? They're not necessarily rational always.
Maybe I should have them a little lower, but I just think the allure of coaching Zion for a guaranteed 3 years, right, is so high that I have to put that one up pretty high. Plus, you'll have Ingram. Kyra Lewis looked good at times last year. Jackson Hayes looked good at times last year. I'm missing a young player. Why am I missing a young player? Najee Marshall looked good at times last year. Who am I missing? I'm missing a good young player for them. But, I think they've got the
Nikhil Alexander Walker.
Nikhil, that's right. Plus, they have all the picks from the Lakers and the Bucks. From their two star trades over the past couple of years. So, like, they have the ability to retool pretty quickly. So, yeah, I have that job pretty high up and appealing.
Yeah, and the rest, I think the rest of these jobs are decently appealing, right? I could think that.
Yeah, I'd agree. I agree.
Pacers would probably be my next one. However,
okay,
you're following up something that's not too hard to follow up, right? Like,
yeah, we've talked about expectations for the other jobs. It's kind of flipped for the Pacers, where like Nate Bjorken reset the expectations. So yeah, the next coach has way lower expectations and honestly a decent roster that's going to be around for the next 3 years, right? So they could just walk into three straight playoff berths coaching that team. I have them fifth, so I'll get to my sixth team after we talk about the Pacers, but I cover that team, so I have thoughts here. Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? Like, they could grow. You know, they have two good young centers. They have a bunch of, again, very solid, not quite all-star, but close-level guys in Brogdon and LeVert and Warren and even Turner. So if they're all back, that team is still good, right? Nate McMillan got them to the four seed, right? So, and Nate McMillan obviously doing very well in Atlanta. So the right coach can take that team to great heights and look really good in the right circumstances. Just has to be a good communicator. That's what they've been really lacking. So I think that can be an appealing. Honestly, I agree with you that besides the bottom two, they'd all be pretty appealing jobs. And the Pacers are among that group that would be pretty appealing. And again, like a low expectation situation with a good roster, because they're coming off a 34-38 season. Like, no, I think fans think they should get better and make the playoffs, but also no one is like, oh, they should be so awesome. So it's like the perfect spot to be as a coach. You know, it's a good spot with that roster. So I have them six. I actually think we've glossed over a team that you mentioned earlier, and I want to bring them up.
Yeah, Pacers are, it seems like a perfect four-year run. You do your four-year run, and then you're gone after 4 years. And
yeah, when their core contracts aren't out at the same time. I have the Orlando Magic six, and you've kind of talked me out of that because we've been talking about expectations so much. So, like, whoever they hire, the fan base is not going to care how good they do, right? Like, they're not supposed to be good for a while. So that is pretty appealing. And they could get two really good picks in this draft, plus the stuff they already have and the picks they have coming from Chicago. So that, I probably should move that job up, honestly. That could be pretty appealing. But the only reason they have it lower is Jacques Vaughn. I forget how you say his first name. He coached the Magic right after Dwight Howard. Similar situation. No expectations. We're just building and developing these players. And then they were awful. He went like 20 or 30 something and 80 something in two seasons. And now every time he's trying to apply for a job as a head coach, I just see people like, oh, he's awful. Look at his record. Oh my gosh. It's like that can matter in the future of your search for other jobs. So like, yeah, I agree. Like Mark Daigneault now with the Thunder, it's an awesome job. There's no expectations. You just have to be a good player development coach. Same with the Magic. And I think it's a good landing spot for a lot of guys. But it's going to matter for your future jobs if you can't grow that team eventually. So there's a lot of pressure at some point. That's why I have it lower, but I understand why you'd have it higher than I do.
The only pressure is just going to come from like 15 people on Twitter being like, why aren't you playing RJ Hampton more?
Yeah.
I feel like that's where it's going to come
from. Mo Bamba needs to play more.
All right, the top two, Celtics, Mavs.
Top three, if you count our half team.
Oh, the Bucks. We're throwing the Bucks out of this.
Though, that's my top three, though, is the half team plus those two you just said.
Yeah, let's just focus on Mavs Celtics. Sure. Which one is a better deal? And I'll start with this. Mark Cuban is the wild card because whoever you are, you have an opinion about Mark Cuban, whether it's from afar or whether it's from actually dealing with him. And if you think that Mark Cuban is like a hard owner to deal with because he's going to be meddling, he's going to want to be in all the basketball decisions, everything's going to come down to him, and he's going to say yes or no to literally everything, then that's not a good job for you. And so it really just comes down to the person. So for me personally, I kind of like an owner like that, to be honest, just to be like, hey, it was him Mark that was the one that signed off on it. And I also like owners that seem like they'll invest in things, but also the Luka over Jason Tatum, just the number one player, right? You kind of have to just go with rosters at this point. I think the Mavs would be higher than the Celtics for me, even though the Celtics get an Eastern Conference bump, which is, I also gave to the Pacers over the Pelicans a little bit of an Eastern Conference bump where you're like, you're going to be in the Eastern Conference a little bit easier. So I'll put Mavs slightly over Celtics. But yeah, I think Mavericks is number one here.
So I struggled tie-breaking these two teams. I have them flipped from you, but I understand why, like, vacuum situation, you'd pick the Mavs to be number one here. Like, Luka is the best player. And like we said earlier, like, they slightly tweak their roster, get a number two, they're like a contender for a title immediately, right away, right?
And it's not like the Blazers, because they Luka can get them there, right? Like, it's just a different type of player than what the Blazers are dealing with. So I can understand why people would be like, well, what, you just said this, they had the same record last year, all that.
I picked the Celtics first because I also think they'll be really good going forward. Tatum is a top, whatever, 12 player, wherever you have him. He's amazing, right? He can win you playoff series.
Yeah.
He couldn't this year because Kemba was hurt and Jalen was hurt. But
I mean, but that 50-point game against the Nets was one of the most impressive things.
That was insane. That was ridiculous. Like, the fact that they even won a game with the roster they had was like, oh my gosh, Tatum's that guy. But the it's the Celtics. Like, coaching the Celtics is like, oh my God, you're coaching the Celtics. That's the bump, like the 16 banner bump. That's why I put them first. That's not a good reason. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't have anything to do with the job or what you're supposed to do. And the Eastern Conference bump definitely played into my thinking when I tied them originally. That's it. Like, you're coaching the effing Boston Celtics. So that's why it's number one for me. But I think that basketball situation alone, it's probably the Mavs, because you're coaching potentially like a top 10 to 5 player like of all time. I mean, it's very premature to say that, but his trajectory is looking that way for Luka. So that's got to be a super appealing job. So
you gave them a Brad Stevens Butler bump, right? Like,
Brad Stevens actually went to the same high school I did. So I have even more connections.
The bias is all over.
I know. I can go way down the Brad train. And I wanted him to coach my lovely Indiana Hoosiers this season too. So my Brad affinities definitely are a factor here. But they're basically the same to me. Like, they're both just kick-ass jobs.
I didn't think about the whole angle of, I had the job that Red Auerbach had, right? Like,
yeah, that's
like
so cool.
At a dinner party, that would be the coolest thing to say.
Yeah, I'm totally. That's like to look up. Again, the Mavs have championships. Like, it's not a crazy thing, but like, if you look up in the Garden and there's six, or the TD Garden. The Garden sounds like the
Garden,
name. But yeah, the Celtics Arena, and you see all those banners, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm coaching this team and we're good. Like, that's so cool. So that's why it's number one for me. But I understand the Mavs being one. And the Bucks, if it does open up, would be my number third, because coaching Giannis would be also incredible. But the expectations there would be very heavy.
Why are the Bucks different than the Blazers? That's kind of something I'm just...
Because they're for sure going to be good and there's no Silas potential. Well, I guess there is Silas potential.
If they lose again.
Yeah. Maybe I should lower that one. That's a good point. I don't know why I'm so secure in Giannis staying there.
I mean, he signed the extension, so yeah. He's there until they trade him, and it'd be insane for them to trade him.
Yeah, I don't think he'd demand a trade. He could. But I have them high up because coaching Giannis would be like, it's like the Luka bump, right? Like, he could be a top 20 player of all time. Like, that you coach that guy when you can. So that's why. But I understand again why you just said they'd be lower. It's
there
hard.
You go. Those are our power rankings. Not as powerful as the last ones that we've done in the past. Not as definitive, but there's some thoughts about coaching vacancies. Tony East, Locked On Pacers. Go follow and subscribe to the show for all the Pacers offseason. Locked On Mavs. We'll have 10 more emergency pods this week, I'm sure, to talk about stuff. Guys, thanks so much for listening to Locked On NBA. Boom.